think we're looking at putting a group of people out there that are going to be able to participate fully. And that's where this comes down to. And we're not looking for partners that are going to be, you know, half-time. I don't think that would be fair, not only on the team and staff and ownership and fans, but to be quite frank, not fair on Kyrie either. When you're putting somebody out there that potentially can't get the right ramp-ups and right build-ups and so forth and look as good as he or the team should under a different set of circumstances, that's why this decision was ultimately made.
Thank you, Sean Marks, for acknowledging that this is also not fair for Kyrie. Kyrie would appreciate that. So, if you've been living under a rock, you're unaware that Kyrie Irving is essentially out for the season until he gets a vaccine. This has been written many different ways, but that's the way that you should interpret it. Kyrie Irving, out for the season, short of vaccination or trade. But this is someone who said that he'll retire if he gets a trade.
Pretty much boxed himself in there.
Yeah, this is, let this be a lesson to all of you who don't want to get this, is that there's things that you can't do when you don't get the thing done that everybody agreed that we need to get done. Yep. So.
Might be your personal choice, but that doesn't mean everyone else has to acquiesce to it.
So, I want to talk more about Kyrie, but first, you teased it.
Oh, yeah.
Breaking news.
Yeah, I mean, not really breaking. And
don't use the old one. We need a new one. Yeah, I saw you go for it, Vic. I saw him try to go touch his gun, and then I touched my gun. I was like, don't you dare. As Wild Wild West stared him down. What's your news?
I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, it's okay. Sorry, it was just between you and me.
It's nothing major, but like the Raptors will cut Freddie Gillespie and Reggie Perry this morning.
That's a little bit surprising. Is that surprising to you? It's a little surprising to me. I'm not playing as close attention.
Not surprising based on how he played in summer league and preseason. Mm. A little surprising based on the way the roster's structured in terms of center depth how much they like Gillespie as a dude. Mm-hmm. And he had 20 games last year in the NBA where he was like a solid backup to third string caliber center. Mm-hmm. But it was a tough competition there. And the fact that I still don't know who of Bonga, Wainwright, Decker is getting cut speaks to just how tough that was.
We are all waiting with bated breath.
Certainly.
Bonga, Decker, and Wainwright? Wainwright is a person, that's my Amadio, learning of him for the first time.
Well, my question is, what was he lacking in terms of making this team, Freddie Gillespie, that you saw in the preseason, where if you're an obscure, on the outsides fan trying to understand why they would let go of him, give us the reasons, Blake.
Yeah, the big thing is he just didn't look like an NBA player in the preseason.
And 6 foot six center.
He's like 6'9", yeah. But everyone on this team is 6'9".
As 6'9" as it gets.
But no, like last year he was really solid and he finished well inside and was solid defensively. And he was probably still their best rebounder in the preseason, other than maybe Precious and Justin Champagne. But you know, he was really foul prone. He shot 33% and he only shot like 22% in summer league. Mm-hmm. And when you're at the margins like that, like as much as it sucks, it's like, mm-hmm. you gotta make the most of your opportunities. And I remember a couple summer leagues ago, they cut Alphonso McKinney because, you know, he went like 1-for-14 in summer league and they thought he was an NBA guy, but his deal was about to guarantee. And sometimes you gotta, you know, make or miss league.
So did Sam Decker kind of solidify his spot on the Raptors last night, and did you have any part in this?
I don't know if I had any part in it, but I saw it coming.
Like Bran from Game of Thrones?
I was going to ask you guys for one quick, bold prediction. Like, you got it. Just like a sentence for me.
Sam Decker, 4 threes tonight.
Okay.
Yeah. I texted you. I don't even think you texted back, but I said if my gambling doesn't drastically improve with Blake next to me, then you should know that I'm going to take that as Blake stabbing me in the back and not providing me with the real information of this is some way of him getting back at me. This is like a passive aggressive attack by him. The Gillespie thing is only surprising to me in the sense of they invested in him last year.
Yeah. And I think he came in with the inside edge because of that. And because of kind of the cultural equity of, they really like having him around. He's a good dude. Everyone enjoyed him.
Yeah. I will say that I never once watched Freddie Gillespie and thought this is an NBA player, someone that I want to have on the Raptors. Again, this gets back to, hey, on a team full of guys that we're not really trying that hard and we're running out the stretch for a schedule, like the energy guys pop. It's what we talked about with the preseason, which is why I'm always saying don't get too excited about certain players and what they look like in a preseason, especially in the NBA, because guess what? The good players already know they don't have to do anything. The ones who are trying to prove something are going to go out there and actually give some effort. They know they're about to embark on 82 games of these things. Mm-hmm. So it was similar with Freddie last year, where and by that I mean Gillespie. I shouldn't call him Freddie. That's kind of disrespectful. I just never saw a guy. I like I said, you can say he's 6'9". I'll never buy that for even like 1 cent, like that he's even close. He's 100% 6'6" or 6'7". He is short as hell for his position. Not relative to me. I'd kill to be called short at 6'6".
Yeah.
But they go out and get Precious, it's like there's only so many energy guys that are air quote 6'9". That you can have. It's like a lot of guys who are shorter than OG Anunoby play center for this team, and he's quote unquote 6'7". So yeah. I don't know.
So the unfortunate reality for guys like Gillespie, mm-hmm. and to a lesser extent Perry, who I just don't think is an NBA guy yet, he'll be 905 bound. It is the replacement level for third centers is mm-hmm. really high. Mm-hmm. Like, look at the Raptors championship year. Eric Moreland was in camp. He had a really good camp. They cut him, and then they signed him. They signed him late in the year, and they're like, "Yeah, there's always a big body who can rebound in the G League." Like, the G League has guys every year averaging 10, 11, 12 rebounds, 2-3 blocks, and they don't do a lot offensively. But you know, Gillespie's skill set is not exactly scarce.
No.
And so that's where when these decisions come down, Sam Dekker scores 18 points in 16 minutes. You know, I don't know if Decker's going to make this team. I think that last spot is probably down to him and Wainwright, because they've given Bonga so much opportunity, and I think they see something there. Mm-hmm. And Decker's argument is basically like, okay, what replacement-level guy or fringe-level guy can give you 18 points in a hurry like mm-hmm. that? Mm-hmm. And the answer is not very many. And when Freddie Gillespie asks how many guys can use 3 fouls and pick up 5 rebounds, the answer is a lot.
Okay, so on to Kyrie.
Yes.
Because once we're starting to talk about Wainwright and Bonga, I'm like, okay, Kyrie. Kyrie time. So, he's not coming here. He's not playing in Toronto. So don't worry about that, Toronto fans, who were fretting about the idea of Kyrie Irving running rampant through the city and him being able to come and play basketball here when you weren't allowed to come play basketball here or something. I don't know, whatever people were so worried about with Kyrie. Either way, do you think this improves the Nets' championship odds? Because I keep looking at it and saying, obviously, if Kyrie's vaccinated and he's ready to play, then yeah, no, it's a good thing to have Kyrie than not. But if he was going to be this part-time player as a distraction the entire year, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm going to stand with my take from Monday. I think when you asked this is before we knew that he wouldn't play any games. And this is when he would be maybe a 50% player. And I actually thought that would be more detrimental than him playing or not playing at all. And I think him now being solidified, not a part of this team, that pressure, that conversation around the locker room, even though you guys kind of like, oh, it wouldn't matter that much. I think it really would matter, like in terms of the other players' performance, having him sometimes there, sometimes not there, not being able to train with this team all the time. I think it actually increases their maybe performance as a team. I don't know if that means that their odds should go dramatically up. I do think that having that outside distraction for now, not a question for the players, will definitely increase their play. I don't know if it stays long enough to say that, oh, now they're going to go on this big old championship run because they don't have to worry about him. I do think that he will probably end up getting vaccinated eventually, I hope.
I think he will too.
Yeah,
it's not a story anymore.
So maybe a month goes by, the team can do what they need to do, not worry about him half being there, half not being there, and then he's probably going to be sitting on the sidelines like, all right, I should figure this out.
Yeah, so my biggest thing is I never think losing an all-star is going to improve your chances. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest concern I have here, the Nets are really well built and they're pretty deep for a star-heavy team, and I think they can withstand. Like, they're going to be very good still.
So you signed Patty Mills for like nothing.
And Patty Mills is awesome.
Really good.
Yeah, yeah. You want to talk about good dudes that fit a culture but can also score in a hurry.
Yeah.
Patty Mills. I guess where my main concern is they have three stars, all of whom have a little bit of injury red tape, mm-hmm. and you now only have two. Mm-hmm. And I think you're less well insulated from if Harden or Durant, and I'm not talking about like sit out a back-to-back, but if either of them has to miss some time or isn't 100% in the playoffs, I think you're a little... a little less well insulated from that without Kyrie in the mix. That's my biggest concern. And when you're talking plus 230 finals odds, I think I want a little bit more confidence there. I think they're still the favorite league wide. I just think 230 is a little rich.
You think they're the favorite without him playing?
Yeah.
Well, that's what they are now.
Loaded.
Yeah. No, they're really, really, really good. Mm-hmm. And those three are going to obviously absorb the vast majority of the press clippings, because as they should.
Right.
But no, they've had a season now, or an off season, where players have made it a prerogative to be there. They grabbed guys like Millsap, Aldridge is back. I think we learned pretty conclusively last year that Blake Griffin is able to dunk.
Yeah, he's still got it.
Yeah.
Like Landry Shamet is like a guy you mentioned seventh or eighth on this team and can really shoot it. Bruce Brown was awesome last year, kind of fitting their system.
They're good. It's not a crappy team around three guys. It's a lot of competent players. Right. Like, even just to reference back to Patty Mills, I remember watching international basketball this past summer, and Mills is there on Australia filling it up, making big shots, and you go, right, this guy has been capable for a very long time. He's going to fit in just fine here.
We haven't even mentioned Joe Harris, who is like the best basketball player ever, who's obsessed with Japanese wrestling, probably.
Okay. I was going to say, I think we haven't mentioned him because basically the main reason that they didn't win that series against the Bucks last year is he just refused to hit a three. It's like, what is it you say you do here kind of thing? Is that there's Joe Harris, as he refused to take a shot, was afraid and couldn't hit one, but ultimately,
by the way, shot 40% on threes for the playoffs last year.
What did he shoot in the Bucks series?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
Well,
yeah. I will look it up right now.
Here's what I'll tell you. If anybody was happy with Harris last year, I think you're his parents.
He shot 35%.
Yeah.
Oh, 33% on threes. That's a tough one when you've led the league in 3-point shooting two of the last 3 years.
Listen, I watched these games.
He's good.
He was bad in the playoffs last year. It was a huge story for the Nets. We got to go, but I just love this move for them. Kyrie could not come back here, be a part-time player, be a constant distraction. I like just what you said, Ailish, where it's, hey, of course you'd rather have Kyrie, but
now you don't have him at all.
Now you just let to settle in and say, this is the team until otherwise. And Blake, if there is an injury, here's my guess. All of a sudden.
Yeah.
Bang, bang, two shots in the arm for old Mr. Irving, old Uncle Drew. When we come back. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Porfar, Blake Murphy, and now, on the line, very much live, Jonathan Osorio. Very pleased to be joined by a man with, you know, pretty massive goal. You're paying attention right now. It's Jonathan Osorio, midfielder for the Canadian men's national team. How's it going, buddy?
Good, good, man. How are you?
Good. So this is definitely live. This is a very, very live interview that's definitely not taped. And so today is Wednesday. You guys are playing a massive game against Panama. Let's just start with this. It's a home game, man. Is it a must win?
Yeah, it's a must win. And these kind of qualifying games, your home games are must wins. And so, you know, we took a point out of Mexico, which was tough, and I think a very good point. And then we took a point out of Jamaica, which, you know, looking back, I think is a good point. It was a tough game, obviously. Out of both games, we wanted to take the win in both games, but I think getting points away is important. But we have to; they're only important if we take care of business at home.
Is it too early in this entire process for you guys to be looking at the table? Like, do you take the point off of Jamaica and then see that Panama came away with more and fret about that at all, or is it just, you know, it's too early for that kind of thing?
No, I think, normally, you know, it's human nature to to do that, to be in the present and, you know, look at other results and kind of base yourself in the moment off that. But yeah, it's still early in the competition as well. There's still a lot of games to be played, but we know that these games come quick, and so we can't overlook any game. We're just taking it, you know, day by day and game by game. And right now we're looking forward to this game against Panama as we're looking at it as a must win.
When you think about the contrast between playing games on home soil and, being away from home, what makes it so difficult for these road games for the team?
Well, in these games, I think, like, in these past two games, we had to deal with, you know, things like conditions that, you know, affect the game, like altitude. And then we went from altitude to very hot weather, the heat. We were dealing with the pitch last game and things like that. You know, there's all these things that you have to deal with. And at home, you're used to those things. You're used to the things that you have to deal with at home. So you just feel more comfortable, and it's a huge advantage. And then for us, you know, we're going to be at BMO Field. A lot of people, we have a lot of guys on the team that grew up in the GTA area who have family and things like that. To motivate them in the game, and you know, the capacity has gone up, so we're just excited to be home, and these home games are such a big advantage.
In terms of the familiarity being such a key factor for those home versus road games, you'd played at Azteca before with TFC. Does that have any impact on your comfort level when you then go there with Team Canada?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I would say that going in there with that bit of experience playing two games before, definitely I know what to expect as far as, you know, the altitude and being familiar with the stadium and having fans there and things like that. I guess it's a more comfortable feeling, but at the same time, it doesn't make it that much easier. It's always still tough to play there, and the only way to really be used to that kind of environment is to play there all the time, and that's not the case, obviously. So it was tough for everyone, but once you experience those things, you kind of know what to expect, and when you go through them and get through them, you have the confidence that, you know, at any time you can go there and play a good game.
I hadn't really thought too much about the changing climates and all the pitches when you're going in CONCACAF and you're moving around and doing all these different games. I would have all thought your answer was going to be, everybody where we go knows we're here now. You know, like everybody, wherever we're playing in the city, is aware that the Canadian national soccer team is in town and what they're here to try and do. And this brings me to playing at home. So it is an advantage, right? And I was there for the El Salvador ass kicking, and that game got pretty chippy. And I wondered if there was a small part of the chippiness in that game that came from the environment of having so many road fans in the bleachers. Because early on when I got there, I was like, holy crap, there's a decent amount of blue here. I wonder if this pisses off the players to a certain degree.
Yeah, of course. We were definitely bothered. When we got in on the bus, we arrived to the stadium pretty early, and all we saw outside the gate of where we go through in, we saw a lot of fans there, but the problem was they're all wearing blue. And I think it's just the culture still of these countries, you know, in Central America, South America. The fans are used to making a whole day out of it, going to the stadium early, being there and being there 2-3 hours before the game and waiting for the game to start. Where here, you know, it's during the week, we have people have work and people are rushing out of work to get to the stadium just on time, just to get to the game. So it's just different factors that you're dealing with. And and then inside the stadium, when you see so much blue, yeah, it kind of, it pisses you off. But I don't know if that added to the fact that the game was chippy, but for sure, we definitely in the future want to see a lot more red in the stands.
So again, this is a live interview, so it's Wednesday, so come down. Tickets are, like, really reasonable. It's really not a crushing ticket. The atmosphere is incredible. The team is better than it's ever been. And you heard it from, like, the man himself. It's a must-win game. So come down and wear red and support the team. And I will say this, man, is, like, the people that are there that are supporting Canada care very, very deeply. Like, you see that it's not very much casuals. And, you know, when you guys come to the supporter section at the end of that game and celebrate that section and cheer with that section, what it means to everybody, the momentum of this program right now, the excitement in this country amongst soccer fans of what is happening here. And I wonder how you guys feel about that as players.
Yeah, we're excited. It makes us proud. It's what we're working for. We want to make those people proud, those people that are in the South End that are there for us, that go to cheer for us every game. And, you know, going back to what the last question, you know, there was a lot of blue, but there was still a lot of red, and we appreciate those people. We don't forget those people. We know there's still a lot of people that are supporting us. We just want more people to support us. We want the whole country to support us. We want the people that came here as immigrants to now, you know, who made a life here in Canada to feel proud that, you know, that they're Canadian as well, and they can support us, even though, you know, they came from a different country. We want to do this. We want everybody in this country to cheer for us, and we're really thankful for those supporters that come every day to support this team, and that's excited for what's happening. And you know, honestly, they deserve it for all these years that, you know, this wasn't happening. It's happening now, we're looking forward to making this country proud.
We're talking to Jonathan Osorio, midfielder for the Canadian men's national soccer team. And for you guys, again, as players, when did you start to feel this shift that the program really was changing? Because we're watching this from the outside, and games that, like, going to Azteca and getting that draw, that's something where you go, holy crap, that's starting to get people's attention that don't just pay attention to soccer. And for you guys who are a part of this, who are trying to get to that World Cup, when did you start to feel like, hey, you know, we have something different, and how you're quantifying that right now?
I think probably it was a little bit after John Herdman took over. It was pretty soon after that, maybe a couple months after he took over, where I think there was a camp in Florida, and we had a it was the beginning of this journey, actually. And we had to start by playing, you know, in the first qualifying rounds against teams ranked very, very low. But, you know, we brought a strong team, and I looked around and we saw the young crop that was coming up balanced with the experience. And that's when I got excited. I think we played a game against the Virgin Islands and the U.S. Virgin Islands, and the coach challenged us to score more than, I think it was more than 7 or 8 goals that game. And that's tough to do. That's tough to do against any team at this level. But he challenged us, and we did it in a tough condition too, because it was very hot that day. And when we got through that, I knew that this was the start of something special for me personally. And then along the journey, there's been times, games that, you know, you see us grow. You see us grow, like, you know, the Gold Cup this summer was an example. The game against USA that we played in 2019, that we won at home, was an example of us growing. And then, yeah, the Azteca, another game that where you see we take a big step forward. And so along the journey, we're getting better, and you know, it's so exciting to see where this group can go, and we know we have a lot further to go still.
You've been a part of that momentum, part of the senior national team since back in 2013. I recently watched the Beyond the Pitch interview where you sit down with Christian Jack, and, you know, you've historically been pretty humble or downplayed kind of the influence you've had on younger teammates. It seems from the outside that that's something you're getting more comfortable with. Have you felt yourself grow in that kind of leadership role as this momentum picks up?
Yeah, for sure. I think I've taken more pride in it. You know, I see, you know, like I said in that interview, I was a little bit naive to the influence that I had maybe a couple years back, I was still thinking that, you know, I'm still a young player. I was still the player that I needed to look to the leaders to learn and stuff like that, or that I wasn't at the stature where the young kids were looking to me as an example. And it wasn't until maybe earlier this year that I really started to see that, yeah, the young players really, I feel that they respect me and they look to me for an example. And, you know, I really appreciate that because I take this profession very seriously and I try to do it the best I can every day. And now that I see that I have an influence, I want to be the best influence that I can be every day so that, you know, these young players can grow to be even you know, 10 times the professional that I was.
That's such an important component of building national programs and another reason for people to be excited about supporting this team now and supporting them in the future. And again, go get a ticket today. You can still do it. You can go get it. It's possible. Not you, Jonathan. You're there. We'll watch you. You don't need a ticket. I'm sure that you already paid for a couple. Like, you've already done your part. He's already bought a couple of tickets. He's already gotten some for some people. Anyways, we're looking forward to it, man. It's been great. And we can't wait to keep watching. Thanks so much for making time for us today.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.